Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Our next guest on today's show is here as part of our monthly check-in with the Juno Police Department. Welcome, Deputy Chief Campbell.
Well, thank you for having me.
So in case our listeners have not met you before, please remind us how long you've been a police officer.
Well, I'll go back a little bit further than that. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised in Fairbanks and moved to Anchorage as a teenager, got my degree in criminal justice from UAA, started applying for jobs. Juneau was the first place that hired me in 1995. I came down here, just fell in love with the town, the culture, the ocean, and it's home. So I've been here since 1995. So this coming spring will be 25 years, and I was actually hired on April 1st.
April Fool's Day.
Yeah, April Fool's. So, of course, I thought it was my friends playing a joke on me when I got the call saying, hey, you're hired. You know, here's your hire date. But they assured me that it was real, and it was. So I'm not really sure who the joke is on at this point in time.
Right.
You know, but yeah, April 1st was my hire date.
And so this coming April 1st will be 25 years of serving here in Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Juneau. Thank you.
So what I wanted to talk about is, because you've been a police officer for so long, mm-hmm. is the changes that you've seen over the decades. We can say decades now, specifically related specifically related to social media. Like, so
sure.
The question is, how has social media changed policing?
Oh, how has it changed policing? Well, I guess you could look at that from several different facets. I'll start with kind of the most obvious, which is how we interact with the public. I was the public spokesman for the department for 13 years. I was one of the PIOs. And our current PIO is Lieutenant Craig Campbell and Aaron Calwara. And I helped train them both. So when I started as the spokesman, it was back in, I think, 2004 is when I started. And social media really wasn't around then. You know, there were things like MySpace and
right.
those types, but it wasn't
yeah.
really the way it was today. And so we got involved with Facebook pretty early on. I'd say maybe it wasn't early on. About 2013 is when we jumped in with both feet as far as having a police presence on there. And it was kind of scary because other police departments had some pretty negative things happen to them as far as, you know, people, you know, trying to put really bad comments or kind of, you know, co-opt their site and, you know, lawsuits and whatnot. But we looked at it and it's like, you know, I think that's really a very small percentage of
yeah.
what's going on. What my experience prior to that was, I won't say their name, but we had a local paper that had
uh-huh.
like a comment section. And when something would happen that had a negative connotation for the police department, a bunch of people would kind of say negative things. And then a bunch of people start saying good things. And it kind of seemed like the good really outweighed the negative. So I watched what Fairbanks was doing. And I was like, at the time it was Chief Johnson. I said, well, let's jump into the social media thing as far as having a presence goes. So we started. And where it really kind of hit home to me was very early on. We had a bank robbery at the bank. I forget which one it is, but it's the one that's in the parking lot of the Nugget Mall.
Uh-huh.
And a guy walked in there, and he has been arrested, and it's been adjudicated. So I can talk a little bit about
right.
the facts of that
yeah.
case. It's not a confidential thing. But so the call came in. And the guy came in, said he had a bomb, left on foot. We had a description of him. And one of our community service officers thought she saw someone matching the description that went into an apartment building that was close by. So all the cops kind of descended on the area. And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that there's a lot of police officers that drive unmarked cars.
Right.
So I would say, okay, we might have, you know, 4 to 6 working at any time, but there's 50 of us. A lot of us are, you know, detectives, administration. So you should probably drive good, even if you don't see a marked car, because there's a good chance there might be an unmarked.
That's a great
in the
PSA
area.
Absolutely. For everybody out there.
So we kind of descended on the area, and turned out that it wasn't the person that we were looking for. So we kind of dispersed. So I went back, and we had a brand new Facebook page for JPD. So I started looking, and I noticed that the public was running with the story. Oh, wow, there's police officers running around with rifles, and they're taking pictures of us and posting it on, like, Juneau Community Collective and things like that. So at the time, I was the PIO. So I got.
Can you explain that?
Sure. PIO is public information officer. So I was like the spokesman for the department.
Right. So if like on your social media account, that would be the person that has the password to the account.
Sure. Yeah. I was the administrator for the account, and I was the one that had been trained. I'd been to classes on, you know, how to write press releases, how to do news conferences, things on that line. So I was like the official spokesman for the department. And so I typed up a press release. I posted it on Facebook and I posted a link to some of the other links, and it instantly changed the narrative from people saying, oh, what's
wow.
going on, to what a I'll say idiot. What an idiot. Well, who robs a bank in Juneau? It was that kind of a thing.
Right.
And it totally kind of focused the conversation.
And invited the community in.
Yeah. So
to
we
be part
had
of the process.
Exactly. Yeah. So we kind of took control over it. This runaway story. People
yeah.
are worried. Oh, lock your doors, you know, to, you know, they kind of knew what was going on. They had the information that they needed. And within, I think, 26 hours, the guy was caught.
Wow.
And he was arrested. And
that's fast. That's a fast turnaround. Well,
that's a very fast turnaround.
Yeah.
You know, we were able to post that he had been arrested, and our likes had gone from, I think it was, we had like 1,000 followers to like 3,000 followers, like within one day.
Wow.
And the cool thing about Facebook is there's all kinds of internal, as an administrator, internal demographics you can look at to see, and it reached like 30,000 people in a matter of less than a day.
Wow, that's
and it was,
great.
And it was really cool that we were able to control the narrative. So that kind of was our first foray into, hey, this is a pretty powerful tool to interact positively with the
right.
public to get our message out.
Yeah.
You know? So that was kind of our first one. And I think now we're up to about, I think we have about 15,000 followers, 15,000 followers, which is pretty good for a city the size of Juneau.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're all over the place. I'm sure my in-laws in Spokane are probably following it too.
Of course,
you know? But
yeah.
still, it's kind of a cool thing that you have that much of a reach.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's definitely a positive
sure.
for social media.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking about is that the Juneau Police Department has been very active. I want to talk about information release in just
sure.
a minute. But thinking about you were at the reentry simulation the other day.
Last week, yeah. It was
Last
fantastic.
Week. Yeah. So, okay. So for listeners, mm-hmm. Later on in the show, not today, but at another date, I'd like to bring back people that were there at the reentry simulation.
Sure.
And for people who don't know what a reentry simulation is, it's where providers and people get to come together and we get to act out what it's like to walk a mile in someone's shoes
sure.
who's reentering into the community from mm-hmm. incarceration. And so we look at all of like the collateral consequences to the barriers of navigating through systems. And so when I'm thinking about – so I think that there's a lot – obviously there's a lot of positive things. But for me as somebody who's formerly incarcerated, mm-hmm. I think a lot about the role that shame and stigma play.
Sure.
And so what do you think are some of the negative aspects to individuals?
Well, so for social media you're talking about still?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's – we have a policy that you know, our employees aren't supposed to be posting things on social media that they come in contact with because of their work. It's kind of funny how the younger – I'm not going to say the young generation, but younger generations seem a little bit more open and free about what they post.
Yeah.
And there can be some pretty severe consequences to that. There's the news is filled with stories of officers or dispatchers or other employees that will post something that's just not socially acceptable, you know, that has a really bad connotation to it or is confidential with their work, and they get in trouble for it. And rightfully so. They should be, right? So we're constantly having to train our staff that hey, you know, having a Facebook account or an Instagram account or whatever, it's a good thing, but just be smart in how you use it so that you don't, you know, cross the line into doing something that's unethical, you know,
yeah.
which does happen, you know. Fortunately, looking for some wood to knock on. It hasn't happened really to us on bad. I mean, every now and then you'll have to go to an officer and say, hey, you know, if you're on shift and something happens, you really shouldn't make a comment on it. Usually they're kind of benign, but it's constant education to let them know, if you're an officer, you're not anonymous,
yeah.
Especially in a town the size of Juneau. I mean, I don't go out to bars. It's not because I don't have a social life.
Yeah. Right?
But I know that if I go out there, it's going to be, oh, there's the deputy chief in a bar.
Absolutely.
You know? So I just don't do it.
I think our advocates of domestic violence and sexual assault feel the same way. It's really hard to mingle in a crowd where you know that people have, you know,
Correct.
Committed pretty serious crimes.
Sure.
Well, I'm thinking about there was There was a post last week that got 110 shares, okay. And then it was reposted and got 73 shares. And I think
One of our posts?
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
great.
So it's great because you're asking for the community's mm-hmm. involvement, but then going through the comments. I mean, and you guys don't have any control over what the public comments.
Correct.
But I'm thinking about like how that leads to like a person later on has to re-enter into the community stigma and that shame, and you know, and how people have a perception about what people like. And that's what I'm thinking about how that could have a negative and that's the unintended consequences of it.
It could very well be. Absolutely.
And that's kind of a difficult area to navigate through.
Right.
Have you noticed any of that?
I'll be honest. It hasn't really been on my radar. I haven't thought about the reentry portion of that. We have a pretty strict protocol for what people can and can't comment. We have a pretty high filter. So like, you know, like cuss words, I think the program automatically kind of filters it out type of thing. I think that like in other sites, like on Juno Community Collective, you're not allowed to say something unless someone is I guess, caught or known.
Yeah.
And our policy says the only time we can really release a name is if the person's been arrested or if we're trying to find them as like a person of interest. Being a PIO is really kind of a delicate situation because you're trying to balance two concepts that are oftentimes at odds with each other. All right. One concept is the public's right to know, right? The First Amendment.
Yes.
The freedom of the press is all about the public's right to know. The public have a right to know what's going on in the community so they can take steps to protect themselves if something's gone. But then you also have on the other side of the spectrum, the individual's right to privacy. And one nice thing about Alaska being such a relatively young state is our Constitution is a really good one.
All right? Yes.
Nowhere in the United States Constitution do they talk about privacy. In the Alaskan Constitution, they do. It's actually one of our listed rights in Alaska, right? So there are certain things that police have to do in Alaska that in other places they don't have to do because of that right. So how do you balance that public's right to know with the individual's right to privacy? And the way the state law has been written, the way it's been interpreted is we don't release the names of someone that's just a suspect, or we don't release witness names. We don't release juvenile names. Those types of names we don't release. The only names we can necessarily release are someone that's actually been arrested or charged with a crime. Because at that point in time, it's crossed over into the public realm where now the public's right to know kind of takes over.
That's great. That's really very, very interesting. I mean, you've answered a lot of questions that I have about like who decides what information goes out and, you know, who has the password to the social media sites.
Sure. And then the other thing that we have is, you know, if someone is, let's say, arrested and we can release their name, there's still things we can't release because an individual still has the constitutional right to a fair trial. Right. So there are things that we have been prohibited from releasing because we know it's going to be brought up in court. All right. A good example is in 2015, we had a double homicide that took place on Douglas. Right. Earlier this year, we had a trial reference that homicide. Okay. In everything that we've ever released, we said that the two victims of that homicide were shot. We never released with what kind of caliber they were shot with. All right. Because the caliber is something that we know is going to come up in court, and it was a pretty unique caliber, so it was also something that would be good for investigation techniques down the road. So we never released that, knowing that that was something we couldn't release. So it's really important for the spokesmen to have really good relationships with the reporters so that we can explain that to the reporters, because in all reality, the public just needs to know that these two victims were shot, not necessarily shot by what.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So even after a person's name is released, there's still things that we are prohibited from releasing because of their constitutional right to a fair trial.
That's great. Thank you so much for explaining that. I think it does get a little bit tricky. And I was also thinking about, you know, because it is a small community and sometimes this information is circulated, you know, how does that affect juries?
It very well could. And that's why we have to be very cautious about what we put out there.
Right.
And I'm not an attorney, so I can't tell you the exact differences. But I know that it's definitely something that we do. There was a memo that came out several years ago from the Alaska Attorney General that basically said, hey, because of these two competing interests and the right to a fair trial, here are some of the things that can and can't be released. And I share that with the reporters when I talk to them. As a matter of fact, one of KTO's reporters in the past was Rosemary Alexander. And she now teaches out at the university at UAS. She has a journalism class. And I went to her class last month in October and talk to the budding reporters about these very topics, just so they understand. Because there's nothing worse than having a reporter, who doesn't understand, asking a question over and over and over again and not realizing that, we just can't tell you because of these other issues. So oftentimes when I talk to reporters, some of the things I'm doing is educating them on the process as well as the specifics of the whatever case we're talking about.
Yeah. Have you seen any other drawbacks as far as social media goes? Like circulating false information or?
Yeah, I haven't really seen that on our site, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing about social media is it's very easy to click and share and repost a meme what we hope for is that we have a society of well-informed critical thinkers, strong critical thinkers.
Yeah.
You have the non-critical thinkers who are the people who believe anything that they read or that's told to them. You have weak critical thinkers who only look for those things that support their argument.
Yes.
And then you have the strong critical thinkers who will look at both sides and then come up with a determination. Well, that's what we want. And oftentimes I've seen people will post something and it's like in the back of my mind I'm thinking, did they fact check this? Is that true?
How do you teach critical thinking?
Yeah. Well, in the college level, you do that through the discussions, the discussion boards, through their papers. I got my master's degree at UAS, and it's kind of painful to get a paper back from your instructor, and in red on the side of the margin, he'll write "Who cares?" or "Prove this," or "Is this true?" It's like, oh, I wish that was true, or yeah, that's my opinion, or whatever,
right.
But social media is just so easy, just to click, copy, and paste, and it could very well be wrong information that you're sharing out there. So, I mean, I have a Facebook page, and my Facebook page is typically, hey, here's what I had for dinner.
Take a picture of it.
Yeah. I stay away from – because, when I was raised, I was taught that there are three things that you don't talk about in polite company. You don't talk about sex, religion, or politics, because you're never going to change someone's opinion and all you're going to do is cause strife. So I kind of take that to my personal Facebook account where, I don't talk about those things just because –
And it kind of seems like the generation that we're in that, from your generation to where we're at now, those are the things that everybody wants to talk about.
Yeah, I guess. I guess they're controversial or whatever.
Right.
I've seen some of these social media arguments and it's like, okay, eventually they're going to devolve down to where it's name calling.
So I just was thinking about the reentry simulation, and we're thinking about the things that we can't simulate. And so that was right. one of the bigger things I was thinking about is that we know that that the human brain processes shame in the same area that it does physical pain. Us as a society uses shame as a way to punish people and to harm people.
Gotcha.
And that's kind of where I've seen a lot of the comments. So when somebody does have a warrant out, or that there is, I think that there's a lot of pros as far as inviting the public into to the process of policing and finding people and circulating information.
Sure.
There's a lot of useful, but then there's like and this is where I want to have more discussions, mm-hmm. to find out how people, if this has been difficult for them reentering back into the community after they had a very public case,
gotcha.
And what are the chances of successful reentry?
Yeah. Great questions.
Yeah. Those are the conversations. I would love for you to come back to talk about some more of those things if you'd like to.
Yeah. And the reentry simulation was great. I went in there not knowing what to expect. And I was like, what am I getting into type of thing, And
perfect.
But it was really good. It was really good. And what was very interesting about it was I got frustrated with the process very quickly. And I started working with my other role players, and we were kind of working to kind of get around the system a little bit.
Which is totally a natural thing that happens.
So
what I would love to do? I would love to have you and Jesse Keel and Sarah Hannon on the show to talk about their experience. Is that something you'd be open to?
Oh, absolutely. It was great.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, then we've got Scott Burton. He's our executive producer today, and he'll be the one helping me to make that happen. Thank you
so much,
Deputy Chief, for coming on the
show
today.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
You betcha.
We'll see you again.
Sounds good.